Hi, this is Jim Cockrum. I have two fantastic guests with us today. And first off, I just want to start off thanking you for purchasing the Amazon FBA course that we've put together, teaching you many of which are eBay sellers. Maybe you've been on eBay and you're starting to figure out Amazon has a lot of potential and the Fulfillment by Amazon program. I've got two great guests today. They're going to help us think through and talk about and train you on, excuse me, on how to use Amazon the right way. So many people are starting to discover this opportunity, and it's going really well for so many of them. We thought it was time for a really good comprehensive course. So my guests today are Suzanne Wells and Skip McGrath. Hi, guys.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing
Hi,
today?
Hi, Jim.
Doing great. Thanks for joining me. I'm excited, first of all, to jump right into this training, but I wanted to just give a brief personal introduction to the two of you and how significant a role both of you have played in my success and my ongoing business. Skip and I have been partnered for a long time together, and for those of you who don't know it, we use a lot of the same people on the back end. We have a lot of the same people on the back end of our businesses helping us keep our businesses sharp from a coaching vantage point. When people want to make a serious investment and learn from the best of the best coaches, we've recruited over the last decade or so some really sharp people, and Suzanne happens to be one of them who's on the call with us. She has coached for both of us before when someone wants to get some one-on-one hand-holding and learn the ropes of running a business from home using eBay or, in this case, Amazon. She's fantastic in so many other areas of expertise. So it's a thrill for me to have the synergy of the three of us on the phone at the same time. It doesn't really happen. I don't know that it ever has happened before, but I think we're going to come up with some really good ideas for the folks that have invested in this course as we talk this through. So why don't we start with you, Suzanne? Tell us what you're doing on Amazon right now, how it's going for you. Give us your story.
Okay. Well, I got involved in selling on Amazon through my coaching clients, actually. I was hearing a lot of them having success with Amazon, especially doing the FBA program, and was just very curious about what could one person do with that. You know, just one person working alone a few hours a week, what was the potential? So I actually got into the business, bought a handheld scanner that we'll talk about in a little bit, and just went out and started buying the books, listing them, shipping them into Amazon so that Amazon could ship them out when they sold. And I did this for a 90-day period just to see what kind of business model I could create for one person to do either on its own or in addition to eBay selling or, you know, other online ventures. And through that, I was able to find 50 books a week that I shipped in, and my profit ended up being $400 a week for only about 5 hours worth of work. So I discovered that this is a very lucrative business model as far as the money you can make for the time invested.
Yeah, and that was when you were first starting out learning the ropes. That's what's
that
interesting
was,
about that. And
I
you put the whole thing into a book.
Right. I started this last June. It would have been June of 2010. And I worked the business June 1st through August 30th. And that's what I was able to build in 90 days. So I'm still selling the books today. I do them for myself. I do them for consignment clients that have a large collection of books or a used bookstore. That's a very lucrative business, too, not just doing the books for yourself, but doing them for others. So that's where I am with it today.
Yeah, that's great. And you've taught many of our student clients that model as well, and that's one of the things that everyone who's taken this course is also getting is a documentation of that 90-day learning curve experiment that you did and your results. So look for that too. Somewhere near wherever you picked up this recording, you'll also find that book. And I appreciate you contributing all that, Suzanne, as well as a bunch of other cool videos we'll talk about more in a few minutes. But Skip, tell us your story. You and I are both kind of known as the eBay guys, but
right.
Probably less and less so all the time as we get more excited about other opportunities. We still both love eBay, but, you know, kind of put it in your own words. How's that transition looked for you? What are you doing on Amazon these days?
Well, you know, I've been on eBay. This is now my 11th year. And up until probably 4 years ago, you know, my my income was probably 75% eBay and the other from, you know, my websites. And about that time, I started on Amazon, and now I'm doing about one-third Amazon, one-third from my websites, and one-third on eBay. Now, I'm just talking about my product sales. I'm not talking about selling my books and training materials, just strictly,
right.
You know, the product sales that I do. So Amazon is a big piece. You know, I've always been a big believer in not having your eggs in one basket and getting into multi-channel selling, and I wished I'd kind of gone into Amazon even a little earlier.
Yeah. Well, that's been my experience as well. And if you just look at the raw numbers, Amazon is starting to kick eBay's butt a little bit as far as raw traffic and those types of
analytics.
Well,
they are, and I got to tell you something else. A big difference is, you know, all the eBay sellers have the feeling today that eBay just tolerates us sellers. But when I went
right.
to the Amazon conference in Seattle last July and all the Amazon people were there, there was a distinct impression they are trying to recruit sellers. They want new sellers. I mean, Amazon treats the sellers very nicely. There was no, you know, I've been to various eBay events, and there's always a lot of contention and people shouting and yelling and complaining and everything. There was none of that at the Amazon conference. The respect that the Amazon sellers and the Amazon people had for each other was just enormous.
Yeah, it reminds me of the early eBay Live events, you know, where it was a big love fest and everybody was wearing their red, blue, yellow, and green sweaters
right.
and eBay buttons and banners everywhere and hugging each other. And it slowly digressed to the final one, which I think you attended as well. And it was
yeah,
just,
the one in Chicago,
you know,
where all the eBay execs had bodyguards walking around.
Yeah,
with them.
Exactly. And they were in and out. And they had
yeah.
brought in other people to answer questions. You couldn't get anyone official to give an answer to any question, really. It was a disaster. No surprise that they kind of canceled that event. But yeah, you've kind of captured the, I think, the sentiment that so many of us are aware of, that yeah, you just don't get the feel that eBay needs us or even wants us a whole lot, whereas Amazon's kind of welcome open arms. And there's some restrictions and things you just can't do on Amazon. But there's a lot of money there, and there's a lot of traffic, which is what we both teach, and I know you do too, Suzanne. I mean, if the traffic is here, that's where you want to be. We have
well,
no
and I
loyalty
think one thing,
to eBay.
One thing Amazon appreciates, well, that sellers appreciate when starting to sell on Amazon is that you cannot just jump into selling in the high-dollar categories. You pretty much have to start with books, media, household products, baby items, the low-dollar areas to prove yourself as a seller. You know, it's a fraud prevention mechanism, so you can't just sign up on Amazon, put a $1,000 computer up for sale, sell it, take the money, never ship it, and, you know, that still happens on eBay all the time. So there are more safeguards on Amazon, I think, to protect both buyers and sellers, and I also really appreciate the Amazon help, the seller help, where you can actually get somebody on the phone in a matter of less than 30 seconds when you have a question. You know, and they're not just reading a script. They really are helping you. So
that's
I think eBay sellers appreciate that factor.
Oh, very, very much so. I mean, I get great support from Amazon. The eBay, as a top-rated seller, I get pretty good support on eBay now, that better than it used to be a couple years ago, but it's still nowhere near what Amazon's supplying.
Yeah. Well, I think if you play what we're talking about forward 5 years, I think it's a safer bet to say Amazon is a safer place to put your eggs than eBay. But who knows? You know, eBay has a lot of money in the bank, and if they hire some innovative executives to kind of flip things around, who knows? But the point is, where there's opportunity, that's where we'll be paying attention and teaching people how to take advantage of that opportunity. I mean, that's what we're all about. So I think we've established that for our students at this point. But explain to me, maybe Suzanne, just 30-second elevator pitch. What is FBA?
FBA stands for Fulfillment by Amazon, which is a program where sellers can send in their inventory either that they're selling on Amazon or any third-party site. Amazon stores the items in a specific, I call it, cubicle area for you. And when your item sells, Amazon ships it. They handle everything post-transactionally, from returns, communicating with buyers about lost packages, tracking shipments. It's pretty much you're pretty much outsourcing your storage, shipping, and customer service for a very low cost.
And that right there should get people excited. If you weren't aware of FBA, the way you've just couched it should get people excited, because instantly you're thinking, wow, I bet they could save me some money on shipping. And they can, right?
Absolutely. There are many benefits to the FBA program. The first thing most sellers need to get over is their inventory is in someone else's hands. But that's okay. You know, if you're selling books and media and you're paying 50 cents to a dollar for these things at thrift stores, garage sales, library sales, it's not going to kill you if a couple of them get lost, okay? So that's the main issue that people have a problem with, is relinquishing that control to a third party. But you are able to log into Amazon anytime, look at your inventory, change your pricing. If you want your item back, you can get it back. So you still have control over what's going on. Would you agree with that, Skip?
Yeah, I would. The way I like to explain FBA, it's like having your own personal drop shipper. You know, in fact, one of my suppliers now, I've just made a deal with them, it's a Canadian company shipping out of Canada. They supply me with ceramic chef's knives. They are actually going to label and ship the knives directly to Amazon's warehouse for me. So normally they would ship them to me, and I would have to unbox them, put the labels on, and then reship them to Amazon. But now I've set it up where they're going to ship them to Amazon directly for me. So, I mean, it's really no work at all.
I have a client
and you're
like
selling
that.
You're selling those knives on eBay too as well, right, Skip? So Amazon's actually doing the fulfillment for your Amazon or for your eBay.
I haven't done that yet, but that's going to start next week. Next week I'll start fulfilling my eBay sales with Amazon. I just go online and enter the address, and Amazon ships it to my eBay customer. I have to send the eBay customer an email explaining why it's coming in an Amazon box so they don't get confused. But
right.
And in fact, that's going to change pretty soon. This year Amazon said they're trying to change over to third-party sellers where they'll ship it in a plain box.
They can put your label on the box.
Right.
I found that confusing as a buyer last year when I purchased a couple things off of just a website and got them in the mail, and they came in an Amazon box, and I'm like, I know I did not order these from Amazon. What is going on? And then later
right.
that same week, I happened to see a show on Modern Marvels about the Amazon fulfillment centers, and you know, they're the most efficient shipping operation in the world. And it just kind of all came together, okay, that's what these smaller companies are doing, is leveraging the power of these Amazon fulfillment centers.
Right, exactly.
I think
it's just,
that helps us get a mental image.
To me, it's just like having, you know, everyone likes to make money drop shipping, and I have a couple of manufacturers that drop ship for me on both eBay and Amazon, and this way I have my own personal drop shipper. I can make better deals when I buy a case of something than when I buy one off from a drop shipper.
And I have a client doing something similar to what you're doing, Skip. He makes his own seasoning salts and barbecue sauces. And he actually has a company that, you know, makes all this, packages it for him. They put the labels on, and they ship them directly to FBA so that he doesn't have to pay for them to be shipped to him and then repackage them and pay for them to be shipped into FBA. So, you know, that's completely possible if your production facility can, you know, learn how to send them in directly to Amazon for you.
Right. But even if you have to send things yourself, I mean, it's not that much work. I would get a box of chef's knives. There's 12 knives in a box. I just open the box. They're all barcoded already, you know, and I just have to put a label on the box and another one inside. I box it back up and ship it to Amazon. And the best part is Amazon lets me use their UPS account. So I'm shipping it to Amazon at Amazon's highly discounted shipping rates, not, you know, my individual shipping rate.
And, yeah, and that's a huge benefit, especially if you're doing books and media. I can send a 30-pound box of books for $16 to $18, and usually one sale will pay for the inbound shipping.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, taking advantage of that Amazon's UPS account is a huge part of this, is a huge money saver.
Yeah, I don't want to get off in, you know, too many little detail areas yet till we get further into this, but you did raise an issue about Amazon losing things occasionally. I was talking to Stephanie Ng. She runs the eBay Dallas user group down there. She was at the Amazon conference in Seattle, and she said Amazon lost an entire box of books, 60 books. And I said, oh, my God, what did you do? And she said, well, you know, I made so much money that month, it didn't hurt me that much, because she said it was about $60 worth of books. But she said, you know, I'm making about $80, $90 a day from Amazon. So I just looked at it as, you know, it's a business loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Amazon will only get better, too. I would imagine that their loss rate is a fraction of a percentage. And like Suzanne said, you know, we're talking about items, any one of which we can afford to lose at this point. With all the logistics savings, and I'm thinking, you know, I rent an office right now where the ladies who work for my eBay business, we store all of our stuff. It would be very beneficial to me to just transition that office space to Amazon, not need an office. They can work from home, manage the business that way. And I'm sure it would more than save me the amount of money that I pay in rent for this little office that we use. So
you bring up
FBA,
something very interesting, because most really successful Amazon sellers, I mean the big guys who are making $10,000 or $20,000 a month and more, have, you know, a warehouse, an office, a couple employees, and with FBA, you can get rid of all that. I mean, you can now, a husband and wife working out of their house, you know, can run a $20,000, $30,000 a month Amazon business, and you don't need all that overhead and expense.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, and even the other side of the spectrum, the smaller guy, which a lot of clients that I coach are retired or, you know, one-person operation, and they've tried hiring people to come in and work and ship their things, and it just doesn't work out, you know, how hard it is to find good help these days.
exactly.
But, you know, this is perfect for the smaller seller, too, who this is outsourcing your shipping. And this, after having been in this business for 8 years and trying to outsource many different parts of it, this is the answer for an at-home seller, is outsourcing this shipping. That's the one thing that takes up a lot of time.
One of my catchphrases for 10 years, and I'm sure Skip's heard me say this before, but this is one of the things I coach my people. It's never touch box tape. If you're touching box tape as any part of your business model is broken. You shouldn't be doing that part yourself. That's $8 an hour work that someone else should be doing. Otherwise, it's holding you back. And in this case, we're talking about someone else handling the entire process altogether. So I'm sure people are kind of excited at this point about the potential and possibilities of this. Let's talk about finding stuff to sell. If I were listening to this right now, that's the part that I would be most excited about. And we have many other resources that come along with this course on ideas, and we'll be adding more. And there's a forum where you can discuss these issues as well. But let's just go through and talk about some of the things we're selling, how to find those things. And in some ways, it's the same conversation we've been having for 10 years with people we're teaching to succeed on eBay. Profitable inventory is profitable inventory. But what makes the Amazon model unique? I know there's some things you can't sell on Amazon that you could sell on eBay, for example. Let's talk around those issues for a few minutes.
Well,
okay, Suzanne, do you want to handle that one?
Sure. I'll do it from my angle. Right now, I pretty much stick to media products, books, DVDs, CDs, VHS tapes even can sell. I get my inventory at thrift stores, garage sales, library sales. Many libraries have books for sale all the time as part of a fundraising effort for the Friends of the Library organization. So, you know, you can just go into your branch library and they may have a section where they've got books for sale for 50 cents to a dollar, and you can go through those and see if you can find anything. And typically books that come from a library or a library sale are in better condition than what you're going to find in thrift stores or secondhand stores. I just think it's people who are affiliated with libraries respect their books more, and they just are in
right.
better condition. As I mentioned, I also do this for consignment clients that have, you know, used bookstores or small charity thrift shops. I handle their books for them for a commission. And I've also put ads out on Craigslist saying, we buy used books, with an entire list of the types of books to look for. And let me just make a comment on that. If you have not been in the book business before, everything you think will be a good seller is wrong. It's not the John Grisham novels and the James Patterson novels that everybody's reading and that are in stacks of 200 at Costco. It's all the other stuff that's very niche oriented. It's pretty much nonfiction for me is what I find is good sellers. Things like homeschool workbooks, you know, getting your real estate license, studying for the SAT, very specific cookbooks like, you know, gluten-free Mexican cooking, these very niche items that are not easy to find. And it really
small
is all about
hobby.
It's
small
all about supply and demand. So if you're seeing
right.
500 of these at Walmart in a big bin, don't buy them, well, as a general rule, unless you scan it and check it. They're not really going to be a good seller. You've got to look away from the obvious and back to the homeschool things, even if they're written in. You know, even these workbooks have writing in them or highlighting in them, they'll still sell.
Yeah, absolutely. I teach that. My book, I have a book called How to Make Money Selling Used Books on eBay and Amazon, and I teach in there in the first chapter, forget fiction. Just totally forget it for now. That's something you can get into years from now when you have the expertise. But the money's in books on fly fishing, transportation, the Civil War. You know, one of the biggest, most profitable books I ever sold, I bought at a thrift shop for $1.50, a coffee table edition, history and development of Formula One race cars. And I put it on eBay, not Amazon in this case, but I put it on eBay and it sold for $294.
Mm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Those are the,
right.
The small niche, interests where, you know, you think to yourself, there's got to be at least 1,000 people on the planet that might want this. That's
mm-hmm.
your big hits. You know,
right.
the stuff that is everywhere. Right.
I sold a book today for $39. I paid $1 for it at a thrift store, used condition, repair and maintenance of your fiberglass boat.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how boring does that sound? But, you know, it was a good moneymaker.
Yes, yes. That's a perfect example. Those strange little niche markets where you think to yourself, I would never read this, nor have I met anyone who would ever read this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the book you want to pick up.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
For the most part. That's a good rule of thumb. So we've talked about books and media, and there'll be other resources, again, just to repeat what I've already said, that will help you, you know, find things to sell. But what other points, what else, Skip, have you sold on Amazon successfully, and how have you established relationships? Like you mentioned the knives that you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, the knives we found at the Seattle Gift Mart. We have a gift market here in Seattle, like most large cities do, and it's a place where wholesale manufacturers, reps, set up showrooms, and you go in and you can't buy anything there and walk out with it. You place an order. But this one manufacturer's rep for Jacquard, his name is Paul Caracco, and I was in his shop, and Paul said, hey, I got this new line of ceramic knives. Let me show you. And he showed them to me, and the pricing was just awesome because they were so much cheaper than the Kyocera knives and just as good a quality. In fact, they're built in the same factory, if you can believe that. You know, I said, okay, I'll try a case of each size. And I tried selling them individually on eBay, and it wasn't working, so I put them together in sets. And the sets all sold over Christmas. But then the individual knives I put on Amazon, and they were selling on Amazon. So now I'm trying to create sets to put on Amazon, but the problem is I have to get a UPC code for them, and I think we'll be covering that and explaining how that works, you know, in some of the material. But as soon as I get the UPC codes, then I'll be sending the sets to Amazon. But I sell a lot of kitchen gadgets. My fire pit grills, those don't work with FBA. They're just too big and heavy, and I would have to spend too much money to buy all the different models. So there's 15 different models, and you know, my cost on them is about $175 each. So those I continue to drop ship from the manufacturer. But I've had that relationship with the manufacturer for 8 years I've been selling them. For the last 5 years, I've had the exclusive on eBay. I'm his exclusive eBay seller. He won't deal with anyone else. And on Amazon, there's 3 or 4 other companies selling them. But I get my share of the business, not, you know, not a lot, but I probably sell one a week or so. But it's one of those products where I make $80-$90 on each one I sell. so that's not too bad. And kitchen gadgets, I'm a big believer in. The truth is, I don't source much on the internet. Although I'm always reporting wholesale sources, and I teach them, and I show companies. But I go look for small niche manufacturing companies at trade shows and the merchandise marts and some research on the internet. I shouldn't say I don't use the internet. I do. But I'm looking for small niche products, in the home and garden category, because that happens to be the area where I've been the most successful. And, one of the first things I do when I contact a company, if their product's not being sold on eBay or Amazon, I try and negotiate an exclusive with them. I say, look, if you let every eBay seller and Amazon seller sell your product, they're all going to start cutting the prices, and they're going to undercut your retailers, and your retailers are going to be unhappy. You deal with me exclusively, I'll hold to your minimum advertised prices, and you won't have to worry about anyone being undercut. And I have that arrangement with a couple suppliers.
Yeah, that's a great tip, by the way, and that's a great way to pitch your services to someone, because I know there's a lot of resistance. Most companies don't like seeing their products on eBay. The first thing they think is, great, we're going to drive the price way down to, this level where it's ridiculous. But if they only have one guy, that's a great pitch, Skip. I appreciate you sharing that. And that's, even someone local, some local shop that has a unique product or, even you mentioned food products even earlier, Suzanne. Like maybe there's a great barbecue place that sells its own barbecue sauce, and, they sell it to local guys that come in. Become their internet representative. Help them market it. Get it out there on Amazon. Help them sell it and get a percentage of that. There's opportunities everywhere, especially
absolutely.
Once you take out the logistics piece. You don't have to be the one handling this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I've got a client who makes her own product. It's without outing her and causing her lots of competition. It's a home decor product, and she makes
right.
it. She's one of our clients, Skip. But we got her into selling them on Amazon, and she did have to get her own UPC code. But now she's doing it through FBA, and because it's a small flat type product, it takes up hardly any space, and very cheap to ship in, very cheap to store, and she's just quadrupled her sales doing this. And it's just amazing the potential. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet, and I don't want to get ahead of you, Jim, but there are two really important benefits to doing FBA that people who don't understand the program don't realize. The first one is when you switch over to being an FBA seller, your competitors become only other FBA sellers, not everybody else. And this
Great
is because
point.
This is because if you're familiar with Amazon, you'll see listings that say eligible for free Super Saver shipping, which is if the customer orders $25 or more of these eligible items, they will get free shipping, and eligible for Prime. And Prime is a membership that buyers purchase from Amazon for around $80 a year. And they get several benefits from that, but the two most important are they get free shipping on everything they order, and it's expedited shipping within 2 days. So not only does your competitor pool shrink dramatically when you do FBA, but your buyer pool increases dramatically, because the only way to get those two groups of people, the Super Saver shipping and the Prime customers, are to do FBA.
Right,
so
because Amazon's able to do that because they're controlling the inventory and they're getting
exactly.
their special shipping rates for UPS
right.
or FedEx or whoever it is they're using to deliver the product. So and that gets passed on to you. So
exactly. And so when I've got
yeah.
clients who already have their own merchandise, or they've got wholesale items or whatever, and they switch over, they just are floored by how many sales they're getting and how quick it happens. Because you're just getting all these other buyers that you can't otherwise reach.
Well, there's
right.
another
people
factor.
Won't even look at you. Yeah, if you're not FBA, there's a lot of people who won't even look at you. It's kind of like
right.
on eBay. If you're that zero feedback seller, it doesn't matter what your price is. You're too new. There's a lot of customers who just won't buy from you. It doesn't matter what you're selling because you haven't established your reputation. Well, the FBA seal is kind of like, yeah, this guy, it's the seal of approval. It's that top seller rating, you know, from eBay equivalent. But you don't have to wait years to get it. All you have to do is send your inventory to Amazon.
And start off with a small batch if you're uncomfortable or not sure or cautious. You know, send in 10 things. See what happens. What's the worst that can happen? They don't sell.
What were you going to say? What were you going to say, Skip?
Yeah, another big factor that people don't realize, that a lot of the products that you're selling, if you're selling new merchandise, you're also competing with Amazon. In other words, Amazon sells a lot of products for their own account. But Amazon always puts the lowest price product first if it's in FBA. In other words, let's say you're selling a book, Suzanne, and Amazon is selling the same book, you know, and you put yours in FBA, where it's eligible for Prime and so on, and you price your book 20 cents less than Amazon. When people search the results, your book will come up ahead of Amazon's book. So if you are the lowest price seller, but if you're not in FBA, that's not the case. It'll always show the Amazon and the FBA books in price order first. And that's true of
right.
any product.
Right, so you get that, as bloggers call it, the above-the-fold placement, where you're at the top of the page, you get more visibility, and therefore more sales.
Now, I can tell you what Jim said about Prime is true. I'm a Prime customer. I pay the $80 a month because I buy so much, I mean a year, because I buy so much on Amazon. And this Christmas when I was doing shopping, I mean, I would do a search on Amazon and the products would come up. And if it didn't say Prime, I just skipped on to the next one and I just kept looking until I found someone selling it or another product, you know, that had the Prime shipping. And that can be huge because one of the things I bought on Amazon for myself last year was a safe. And the shipping on that safe would normally be, you know, I'm sure it paid for my whole year of Amazon Prime membership, just getting the free shipping on that safe.
But what
people don't realize,
I'm sorry, Jim.
Oh, I was going to say, Skip's kind of brought up, there may be some arbitrage opportunity in there. If you see the point, I'm just kind of brainstorming right now, but if you saved probably a couple $100 on shipping buying a big safe, turn around and flip that and sell it for a profit if you can get a good deal on it. You know, even in the local, I've seen people sell items locally for a profit. They buy them on eBay super cheap and sell them locally. Well, if you're getting free shipping on big items like that, that's a great way to stock a local store if everything's got free shipping on it. Just a brainstorm freebie there, but I bet there's something to that.
Well, there is, and actually you can do the arbitrage things. I did it with a book recently, although I don't recommend getting into novels. This was a novel I was looking for because I wanted to read it, and it was an out-of-print book from the 60s. It was a mystery novel sort of a spy novel by a British author, and I found it on Amazon in pretty good condition from a non-FBA seller by drilling down, and I bought it for $1.50, and I had to pay the shipping on it because it wasn't Prime. He didn't have it in FBA. I got the novel about a week later. I read it. It took me about 3 days to read it. I put it back on Amazon, sent it to FBA, and it sold for $46.
That's great.
And
what
I was going to mention about that is, like you said, that as a Prime customer, you're scanning through looking for Prime. And as an FBA seller, you can get more for your item as a non-FBA than a non-FBA seller because, you know, if you're the only one with it, with the Prime logo on it, and yours is $5 higher than everybody else, they're still going to buy from you.
Yeah, because they're saving $7 or $8 on the shipping.
Right. So you can make more money, get more customers, and have fewer competitors. So it's, you know, all these factors working together that make it, you know, I just don't think you can lose doing it.
I want to keep focused, if we can come back to what can and can't be sold. Because, Skip, you alluded a little earlier, all these items were too big and too bulky to use FBA. And, Suzanne, you've said you do a lot of media, books, and DVDs and tapes and things. You know, let's throw some other ideas out there. Where are the limits on either side? What's silly to sell?
Toys are awesome
toys.
To sell, and that does not even just before Christmas. You do have to be an Amazon seller by October 1st, I believe, to get in for the toy season for the, you know, upcoming holiday selling time. But toys are just excellent sellers. I know so many people who just made a killing doing it. And I'm talking going to Walmart and buying them at retail and putting them on Amazon and, you know, making, doubling what your investment. And it's, again, supply and demand. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Wyoming or those kind of states where there's just not a lot of retail in some of those states, in certain rural areas. And people are, you know, they've got satellite internet, they've got internet on their phone, they can get to eBay and Amazon, but they may not be able to get to Walmart or Target.
Yeah, and their kids want all the same toys that are showing on Saturday morning cartoons.
They're still
but
seeing
they're
Nickelodeon
2 hours from Walmart.
Yeah, and
you're
so,
right.
And also with the FBA program, you can sign up for international. So you can get all those Canadian customers without one more second of your time involved.
Without any of the shipping worries.
Nope.
Isn't that just beautiful?
Nope.
I mean, that's the thing that keeps most of us from international is the whole shipping. I don't want to fill out all the forms every time. Amazon handles that for you, the FBA
absolutely.
Program. Once they have it,
so,
it's out of your hands.
You know, toy. Don't think, oh, it's January, the toy season's over. Oh no, kids have birthdays all year long. Kids want stuff all year long. And, you know, it's a great market to get into. But it goes back to, what do you have access to that maybe other people globally might not?
And let me just share a success story. Then I got a success story too. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you there. two things happened to me recently. About a little bit before Christmas, Karen and I were at Costco, and we saw these tactical flashlights, the little small LED tactical flashlights, 3 to a pack for $17.95. I brought those. I bought an entire case first. Then we went back and later and bought 3 more cases. We broke them up, took them out of the packages, and we sold them individually on Amazon and eBay for. On eBay, I got as high as $29.95 for them. On Amazon, I was getting about $17.95. It just, you know, I just put a label on them, shipped them all to FBA, and then just a few days ago, I'm watching TV and watching a Bobby Flay cooking show, and he does this recipe where you need vanilla beans, and I say, okay. I go on Amazon, I look for vanilla beans. Here's a guy selling 2 tubes of vanilla beans for $19.95. And the package arrived yesterday. I opened it up. They were from Costco.
Wow.
I could have gone over to.
That's a great story.
So, in fact, we're stopping at Costco this afternoon. I'm going to look for the beans and see what Costco is selling them for. But I bet it's like $8.95 or something.
Oh, yeah, sure. Maybe a big closeout. You know, Big Lots is a store. I know, Suzanne, you probably got a bunch of these stores you can just rattle off the top of your head. But Big Lots is popular here in the Midwest. I've seen them. And even if I go into a Target or a Walmart and they've got the closeout aisle, what I've found is you can negotiate with the manager. I'll ask for a manager. If something is in the closeout aisle, don't just assume they've marked it down as low as they will. I had a big box of posters one time. I think I was at a Lowe's hardware store, and they had these wall murals, 8x12 wall murals of the Space Shuttle Columbia or something like that for a kid's room. And they were on closeout, marked down from retail, I think was 80, and they were marked down to 10 bucks a piece, and they had about, I don't know, 20 of them left. And I started I quickly looked, and they were selling well on eBay, so I was just going to buy the whole box of them. But then I asked the manager, I said, hey, if I took all these off your hand, what kind of discount could you give me? And he said, oh, $5 each. He cut my price in half right there on the spot on a whim. So you can, if you're going to buy a bunch of stuff, they want to move their inventory. And if you're going to buy it, they don't care that you're going to go sell it on eBay. You probably don't want to mention that, but
right.
You can get a discount. You can get a discount just by asking, especially if you're going to buy a bunch of something.
And Skip mentioned Costco. Don't assume that everybody in the world has the same stuff in their Costco that you have. I can go to 3 different Costcos in Atlanta and find different things. So, you know, make notes of what you're seeing, do your research. Just don't assume that everybody has access to the same things you do because they don't.
And while we're talking about research, I think we spent some good time on where to find products, how to get them. I think we've got people's creative wheels turning a little bit on that. How do you research and make that quick decision? You don't want to use your instincts until you've got really, really good developed instincts when you're looking at an item. How do you, if you're standing in a Costco and you see, you know, a closeout sale and a bunch of widgets, what do you do?
Well, I have an iPad, and I just go, it's the G3 model, so I can be online anytime. And I just go on eBay and see if they're selling on eBay, and then pop over to Amazon, do the same check, and I know
you
if
you check the completed listings on eBay. Right? That shows you the most recent 30 days, right?
Always check completed listings. The ongoing auctions tell you nothing. And then on Amazon, I just see how many sellers and what the sales rank of the product is, and you know, make a decision on the spot.
Do you have any rule of thumb when it comes to the sales rank of a product?
Well, it depends on the product, because it's what I really look for is the sales rank by category, not the overall sales rank on Amazon. The overall sales rank on Amazon for a niche product could be, you know, down in the hundreds of thousands. But the sales rank in the category, if it's in maybe the top 10,000, I'll probably go for it.
How about you, Suzanne? How do you make those snap decisions?
I use a non-technology approach. I'm very trial and error. I don't have an iPad because I didn't win it and skip contest. I don't have one.
I got to send you one next Christmas. I'll get to you. If you don't have one by Christmas, mark my words, that's my Christmas
that's
present
funny.
To you this year.
Okay. Anyway, I've done a lot of selling of health and beauty products on international sites, and I just kind of feel for certain things, like anti-aging products always do well. Anything that's like, teeth whitening kits, Rogaine, these sort of specialty health and beauty products that are sort of expensive, those usually do well. And I don't know, Skip, if you see something that comes up on your iPad as a keeper, I mean, do you buy a quantity of it right there on the spot, or do you?
Well, generally, I'll buy enough quantity to test it, like a dozen or 20 or something like that. I won't buy 100 or 500. But then if it starts selling, like within the first 3, 4, 5 days, if I'm seeing sales, I'm zipping back to Costco and I'm just taking all they have. Those flashlights.
I just do that on a smaller scale. I might buy two or three of them and see what happens. And if I have to end up returning them, that's okay.
That's a great point, Suzanne. I don't want to breeze past that. All these stores give you a receipt. And they will take returns with a receipt. If it doesn't sell, or if you come home and do your research and, you got some lemons, you take them back and you get your money back. That's the worst case scenario, right?
Absolutely. And, it could be that you did your research and everybody else figured it out at the same time, and all of a sudden the profit margin is nothing. Return it. It's unopened. It's unused. You don't want to return 100 things at a time, but that is a safety net if you're working with expensive products that don't sell, is keep those receipts.
Yeah, you got to be a little careful. Costco and Sam's Club and those places, if you're returning stuff too often, they will shut you off. They know what you're doing, and they'll shut you down. But you can do it occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And especially as you're experimenting and just getting used to this, it's an option. Don't feel like you're stuck with your inventory. And even if you lose a little bit playing this game, as you develop good instincts, it's all right to get out there, experiment, and I like what you said, Suzanne. You've just kind of developed an instinct for this,
and over time,
you can learn to trust that instinct.
Absolutely. And one more niche type product. You mentioned food products. I know several people who sell just basic food products that are shippable, and most of them go overseas, and they're doing it through FBA. Things like, cookies and Twinkies and mints and gum and all those types of things you can get at Sam's and Costco in the big bundled packs. You have to think through how shippable is this product. You don't really want to do potato chips or those types of things. But some of these are going to, again, those rural areas where it's just easier for them to go on Amazon and order it and have it delivered than it is to take their 6 kids an hour to the grocery store. Or they're going to international locations that don't have these products in their country at all.
Well, I know my wife's twin is a missionary in Calcutta, and her kids are just like my kids. They're teenagers and preteen, and the same foods that everyone craves when you leave the United States, and even if you go to, Canada, for example, there's things they just don't have there, let alone if you go to Calcutta, India. There's things they just don't have. There's a lot of displaced or Americans that move abroad, and they're there for several months, or maybe they've moved permanently, and they crave Hamburger Helper or, whatever the great food that they're used to eating. And you can find those things here easily, but it's worth a lot to them. And if you cut off all of the difficulty of shipping things and the the having to worry about customs and all that, if you can cut all that out of the equation, it makes a lot of sense to go grab some of those types of items and throw them out there on your Amazon account using FBA.
And that's where the big loss comes in.
Throw them on eBay and just ship them through Amazon.
Exactly. Thanks, Skip.
Either way, yeah. And that's where your big lots comes in handy, these types of items that you can buy in a decent quantity. And, you know, there's your supplier right there.
Well, let's get into, and we'll have plenty of other ideas, I'm sure, that over time. We've given people a ton of, I think if people just stopped listening right here, they've more than gotten the value of what they paid for this course if they use none of the other resources we've given them. This is a game-changing business plan. This is something someone can go out right now, start doing, and within a few days, they're seeing the results of their efforts, and it doesn't take a lot of work. It's a beautiful business model. But let's get into some of the detailed tips and tricks that you've learned, Suzanne, after having done this quite a bit. Like what size boxes should I be using to ship this stuff to Amazon? Is there a sweet spot there? Or, you know, and just some of the logistics, some of the little issues that you've run into.
Well, the first and most important task you need to do before sending anything in is to change your pricing. Because, as I mentioned, your competitors are now going to be other FBA sellers, not everyone else. So you will no longer get that shipping credit that's on your items. So you've got to go back in and reprice your items based on what your competitors are doing. And a lot of people don't realize that, and that's going to affect your bottom line. So that's the first thing to do. As far as the boxes, depends on what you're shipping in them. But if you're shipping 100 books, you don't want to try to fit all those in one box. You know, use small, manageable boxes that you can pick up and get into the car. If you're taking them to a UPS store to drop them off because of the UPS inbound shipping, or even having them picked up at your home, you're still going to have to pick up those boxes and get them to the front door. So that's a mistake a lot of people make, is they don't realize how heavy those boxes are once they're full. Another thing is printing out your labels. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Skip, but if you don't set the PDF document with your labels, you have to change the page scaling to none. By default, it's set at print to fit margins.
Right.
And your labels will not line up. It will print across the crease of your label. And it's very frustrating. I have people that just give up because they can't get their labels to print. And we've got a video about how to change that setting.
Yeah.
So
that's one of the videos that you made up. Yeah, for everyone who has this course. But let me just back up a little step. I'm trying to play the role of the completely confused newbie for just a moment and remind everyone why these labels are even necessary. When you're sending inventory into Amazon, they need to know what it is they're getting. So you're putting a little barcode on each one of them that indicates to Amazon and points them exactly at that product that you've already plugged into their system, right? You've already typed in the details and they know what it is
right.
They're getting them. They can match up the inventory. So
you
the
will,
labeling
you will
process.
Be, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I was just saying that the labeling process is really the only manual piece of this that you've got to kind of get in there and get your hands dirty a little bit, print some labels, and or pay someone to do this part for you. But just back up for me for just a minute and talk through how do you do that? What kind of printer do you need? How do you figure out what label to stick on the items? Explain that for me a little bit, because I feel like we kind of skipped over that, and now we're talking about, you know, sticking the labels on.
Sure. My bad. Sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault. I'm trying to play the role of I've never done this before.
When you go through and convert your existing listings to FBA, there's a process that you go through, which we do have a video for you for that, that shows you every single step. But one of the things you'll be doing is printing out labels that you will put on your products that will identify you as the seller and this as your product. So when those products are being scanned in at the FBA center, they will go, you know, under your account. They'll be live and able to be purchased. They'll also be scanning those labels when your item sells so that you get credit for the sale and that the item can be tracked through shipping and all that. So most people just use their basic, you know, inkjet printer with the Avery 30 to a page labels, like you address labels. And you need to cover up any existing barcode on the product with your label. And this is to prevent any confusion when your item's getting scanned in or out. Some products will have multiple UPC codes on them, or like books will sometimes have a UPC code and an ISBN number, which is an international standard book number, I think is what it means.
Good job.
but you need to cover all those labels codes up, even if you have to use blank labels. This is just going to prevent any confusion, prevent your items from getting kicked out or confusing the scanning system. There is another method you can use where you print labels out one at a time. Skip, do you use that method?
Well, I'm just transiting over to, we're going to have a session, another part of this course with Chris Green from FBA Power, and I'm transiting over to their system with, and it comes with a Dymo label printer that's, and kind of automation that does it for you. And I won't steal Chris's thunder. I'll let Jim and Chris talk about that on another recording. But it's, I'm a big believer in automation and saving time. And the fees I pay to FBA Power far, far offset the time savings and other cost savings that I get.
Yeah, so Chris will have some equipment.
Chris
has some standard equipment
special,
that he recommends and everyone uses.
I think Chris is putting together a special for all of our students that have taken this course where they can get the equipment, the service at a discount, and even get a free trial, like a month free trial or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there'll be more details on that. That's for when you're ready to ramp this up and save yourself a lot of time. He's got a special printer he uses and a special process he uses to really ramp this business up.
But I do the same thing Suzanne does now, just using my normal, I have an HP inkjet printer and the Avery labels, and, it's a little bit of manual work. I get a box in, and I say, okay, I put it aside, and I usually dilly-dally for a while and say, okay, I got to get this out of the way, and I sit down, and I spend a half an hour making my labels and putting them on the items and boxing it back up, and then we take it down to UPS.
And that's the kind of stuff your teenager can do. I mean, you can print the labels out and they have them stick them on the products, you know, if you're getting your family involved in the home business and need more hands to help you. You know, that's an easy thing to have a kid do it because it has the title of the item on it, and you just put them on the books.
So, I'll tell you, it's a whole lot easier than managing a room full of books, which is what we've done. We've got several hundred books that we're transitioning into the FBA program. And just keeping track of them, and, you know, because the four-year-old wants to go and read one, it's like, wait, nope, that's one that's on sale. They can't do that right now, sorry. You know, it's just get them out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids can understand that process. You know, we've got our 10, 11-year-old in there, pretty much can run this business, you know. It's not a complicated thing once you get it, once you get the system automated. So, yeah, it's a great way. I'm glad you mentioned that, Suzanne. Get the whole family involved in this business and just helping them be exposed to that. It's a huge benefit of this business model as well.
But you don't want to wait till you have 300 items to send in. Don't do that.
Oh, no.
Do about 20 to 30 at a time at first until you understand the system, and then you can do bigger batches. Don't start with a huge batch. That's going to totally overwhelm you because I did that, and it took me an entire day to unravel everything.
That's a good point. You want to manage these small batches at first so you get used to it, and then you can handle bigger. That's a great point.
Yeah, Jim, just to make your point about kids doing this, at the Amazon conference, we met a 16-year-old girl who was there with her mother, and her mother was just there chaperoning the girl. The girl was participating in the conference. She has an Amazon business selling DVDs and video. She does strictly music and movies. And it's about a $5,000 a week business. So if anyone bought this course and they think, I can't do this, think again.
Yeah, and recruit a teenager to help you if you're desperate. Yeah, on a completely unrelated note, Skip, you'll appreciate this, and you too, Suzanne. My 10, just turned 11 recently, year old, has multiple YouTube videos with 100,000 plus views and followers, just hundreds and hundreds of followers, and I've never done a thing with it to help him promote it or teach him anything about it. He just asked to borrow my flip video camera. That was my contribution to his success. I mean, you know, we've got kids just tearing it up, and they get this stuff. Seriously, recruit one of those sharp internet kids to help you run this business and just watch their instincts kick in. They know how to do this stuff instinctually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a retired couple and you're challenged with the technology, you know, there's probably a teenager in your neighborhood who'd work for $5 or $7 an hour and do this stuff for you.
Absolutely. They don't cut yards anymore, but they'll help you run your Amazon business. But all right, well, what other tips do you have, Suzanne? You'd had several good ones there that you'd kind of sent me before we started here. We talked about the getting your PDF file lined up correctly, and you've got a video for that. What other things can you share with us about working with FBA?
Okay, well, when you convert your items over to be shipped in, they're going to appear as unavailable, and that's because obviously they're in transit, and you don't want to sell something today after it's in a box and it's not going to get to Amazon for 4 days. You know, that they won't let that happen. So as soon as you
right.
convert it, it will show as unavailable. Now, what tends to happen, and it's a great thing, is sometimes your items will sell as soon as they're scanned into the warehouse and they don't even make it to your storage area. And I think this is because people have set up, you know, notify me when this item becomes available. It's scanned in, the customer gets the notification, and then they buy the item immediately, and it never even makes it to your storage area. So you may have,
that's cool.
You know, 80% of your order that shows up as available, and where's the rest of it? Oh, my gosh, did they lose it? What happened to it? No, nothing. Nothing happened. You can go in and check your pending orders, and it will show you which ones are pending, and that means either someone has clicked, you know, put it in their cart, their virtual shopping cart on Amazon, and haven't paid for it yet because they're still shopping, or maybe they're trying to check out and their credit card's expired and they're having to update that. Some logistical issue there. It doesn't mean your item is lost. So I go on
right.
and check my pending items every day just to see what's coming down the pipeline, what's sold, and they may sit in pending for a week until the customer actually checks out. So
yeah, they let customers
hold
things, yeah, in their shopping cart, right?
Right.
And that changes its status from your vantage
yes.
point. No one else can buy it while they're holding it. It's like at a yard sale. Someone picks something up and they're sitting there looking at it and thinking about it. Well, no one else can buy it until that guy either puts it down or, you know, decides to get it himself. It's the same
right.
thing.
Right. And so I put together a video for you, Jim, on how to check your pending items to see, okay, why is this item not showing up? Why is it unavailable and everything else is available? And that's usually why.
That's a great video to have included. And again, look for those videos right near where you're listening to this audio or the page where you downloaded it. We've got all these videos that Suzanne put together. It's these little unusual things, that the little bumps in the road that you're probably going to run into. And if you don't know who to ask, you're going to be a little confused. Well, we've got videos for several. There's 8 or 9 of them, and we'll add more in if we need to as discussions move forward. So pending orders, got it. That's a great tip for folks. Let's talk a bit about fees in your FBA account. How do we look at our fee chart and understand what's going on with FBA?
Well, that's a little confusing too, and I've made a video for you about that. But it depends on how the person purchases the item. If they're a Super Saver shipping customer, their shipping fee is prorated, so you're going to be getting credits and debits on that you've got to match up. If they're a Prime customer, it shows up a particular way, or if they just purchased it outright and paid the standard shipping fee. So, again, look for the video on interpreting your fees, because you may see a fee for $23, and you're thinking, well, that book only sold for, you know, $10.99. Why is this fee $23? And in that case, it was probably an international customer who paid that shipping fee, but you're going to get a credit back for that. You know, those fees aren't totally your responsibility. Amazon's paying some
right.
of that.
It's sort of like interpreting your PayPal account at times. You'll see stuff and like, what in the world is, you know, there's, they debited that twice. Oh, no, wait, they credited it back right here.
Right,
you know, you've
right.
Gotta, you've
so
got to understand
gotta
the fine line.
Look
yeah.
through those credits and debits to actually understand what your bottom line fee was, and it'll show, it'll break down everything from the what they call the pick and pack fee, which is actually the person that gets on the cart and goes to your storage area and pulls out the item and packs it in a box. So there's something called a weight-based fee. So if you're shipping, you know, something very heavy like a coffee table book or a textbook, there's a little bit higher charge for that. It's not extremely significant, but maybe a couple of dollars more. Those types of issues that will vary by product. So Amazon fees aren't really as cut and dry as eBay. There's a lot of other factors in there once you get into FBA, but they're all explained if you just go into your transaction report and look at those fees.
Okay. So have you found them to be pretty accurate and fair with fees? I mean, I have to be honest with you. I don't spend a whole lot of time looking at on Amazon or PayPal or eBay, you know, my fees. I just kind of trust them. Are you safe just kind of trusting them, or have you actually found errors before that you needed to go in and challenge Amazon?
I have not found errors. No, I think it's very fair. And generally speaking, and Skip, you know, tell me if you agree, it's around 15% of the sale price. Pretty
yeah,
close
I agree
to
with
that.
That. It's more expensive than eBay, but the workload is so much less. I mean, I'm paying a little more in fees, a couple percent probably on average, but Amazon's doing all that work for me that I don't have to do myself. So, I mean, that's a win-win all the way around.
So let me ask
right,
you this, Suzanne. What happens? Go ahead.
I was going to say the time savings, there's no taking pictures, there's no writing descriptions, there's no really communication with customers because everything they could possibly ask is on that listing. So your time saving is huge. You can use your time more for sourcing products than dealing with customers, taking pictures, and writing your listings.
Very good. But, you know, it occurs to me that we really didn't talk a whole lot about what can't be sold on Amazon. And I'm sure this is discussed other places in this course, as well as if you just go to Amazon.com and sign up for their seller program, they're going to tell you these types of things. But give us the quick and dirty on that, and then I have one other question as well for you about returns and how to handle those. What can't be sold? What are the restrictions?
Well, obviously, if you're using FBA, you can't do anything fresh. In other words, you couldn't send a crate of apples to them.
Anything with an expiration date.
Right.
Like fresh
anything
foods,
with an expiration
kind of thing.
Date
yeah.
or it's going to spoil or something like that. And the standard things like, you know, you can't sell pets and cigarettes and wine. Well, I guess you can sell wine, can't you, Suzanne? There are some wine sellers.
I believe you can sell wine.
Yeah.
I think you can.
Not hard liquor.
Right.
But
it's
a similar list to the eBay restricted items list is probably pretty similar, you know, the illegal things and such. But are there any restrictions beyond that? Because I'm thinking, you know, like the whole barcode issue, we've kind of solved that problem. I mean, even if it's a homemade item, you can put a barcode on that item.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not that hard to do. And now it's a sellable item on Amazon. Are there any other, like you mentioned, weight restrictions, Skip? But beyond
well,
that,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
pretty wide open.
It's kind of wide open in weight because, like I say, I bought a safe. And
right.
that safe was at it was an Amazon Prime. So that means Amazon had it in their warehouse, and it was about a 400-pound safe.
I mean,
so,
someone used FBA
yeah.
and got it there.
Absolutely, and I mean, like I said, I paid $80 a year for Amazon Prime, but the shipping on that safe would have been a couple hundred dollars, I'm sure. I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, here's the thing. When you log into your seller account on Amazon, if you look over on the left-hand column of the page, you'll see there's all the Amazon help files and the seller's forum and links to all of that, and that's where you can find that kind of information. I'm just off the top of my head. The things you can't sell, it's similar restrictions to eBay. Now, I mean, I wouldn't obviously try and sell something as big as a piece of furniture, but, you know, there are companies on Amazon selling furniture. So I shouldn't say that, but
yeah.
I suspect there are regular furniture companies with big shipping departments and everything.
The misconception I'm trying to overcome at this point, though, is it's not just videos and media and movies and books. Amazon is pretty much everything now.
Oh, absolutely.
As much as everything as eBay ever was.
I mean,
you can do clothes, clothing, baby items, household products. You just have to think of logistically, how is this going to be easy for you to ship in? And then
right.
it's going to have to be reshipped out again. And also, as Skip mentioned, the bigger products, one downside for things like furniture and the fire pits and all, is you're paying storage for that item. If it's there for 30 days or more, you're charged a storage fee. Now, I usually have around 500 books in inventory at all times. They're constantly going in and out. And my storage fees have never been more than $3 a month because it's constantly moving and nothing's sitting there. So you
right.
want to focus on items that are going to sell relatively quickly within a month or so, and so they're not sitting there and you're not going to get charged those storage fees.
Well, the other thing
you can tell by
the
popularity of the product how long it will take to sell. Yeah, go ahead, Skip.
Yeah, the other thing is the cost or the price of the item. In other words, let's say my chef's knives, I have to buy them 12 to a case and one case at a time, but each knife is $25, $30. But if I was selling something that where the cost was $100 and I had to buy 12 at a time, that's $1,200 that I have tied up that's sitting in Amazon's warehouse until it sells. And so this business is, unless you're, really in the big bucks business. I mean, if you bought this course and you have a store already, a brick and mortar store where you sell barbecue grills and you've got 50 barbecue grills there, you probably have the capital to ship 10 of those barbecue grills to Amazon. But if you're like the rest of us, I mean, you want to deal in items where the cost is $1, $2, $5, $10, $20, $30 each. You start dealing in things that where your cost is $100 each. You've got an awful lot of money tied up in inventory, and you better make sure that inventory is moving fast.
Right. Good point. It's much easier to play this game with lower dollar figure bulk products than it is to get into the bigger dollar figure stuff, especially when you start out. But okay, well, I feel like we did that topic justice then. I didn't want to ignore that one. What happens if an item is returned to FBA? Customer gets it, doesn't like it, it was broke or whatever. How does that
okay,
happen?
First of all is don't panic because it may not be your fault. It may not be anything you did. Books are returned all the time because it's a bad address, the person moved and didn't update their address online, or it's tied to a credit card where the address is no longer correct, and it comes back because it's undeliverable. In that case, it just goes right back into your inventory, and if you sold it once, you're going to sell it again, so you don't worry about it. Amazon will credit you back for that. I have not had anything that was damaged or broken to be returned. Have you, Skip?
I've had one item. I sold a Lagio corkscrew that when it got there, the shell on the side of the corkscrew was cracked. Don't know how that happened. I suspect it was – I never inspected the corkscrew. It was in the original manufacturer's box. It may have been cracked from the factory. And that's the only item I've ever had returned on Amazon in 4 years. And that was before I was doing FBA. I had shipped it myself. So, I just grabbed the new one off the shelf and shipped it out to the person and handled it that way.
But
and
Amazon makes you aware.
Yes, you will get
a guarantee. One thing sellers should be aware of is Amazon has what's called an A to Z guarantee, which means you can return anything within 30 days for no reason whatsoever. It doesn't have to be broken. You can return it I just don't like it, And you have to stand behind that. And like I say, I've only had one return. I've never had a return because someone just didn't like something. I've just had that one return for a cracked product. But I have talked to sellers that have had to handle returns just because people don't like it. But, if they return it unopened in the original box, Amazon is going to put it back on the shelf for you. If it's not, you're going to have to get it back and, replace that in your inventory.
So Amazon holds your hand through that process, though. I mean, they're going to let you know what's happened, what you need to do about it,
and
what your role is in the process.
Yeah, and best of all, they do almost all the communications,
Right, with the customer.
It's a very easy process to deal with returns at Amazon.
Cool. Good to know. Well, I'm going to go through at this point. We're going to be wrapping up real soon. We've been almost an hour here, and or right around an hour, I think. I just want to make sure everyone understands that to listen to this audio, this training that you've received today is only a small portion of what all you've gotten from us as part of helping you get your Amazon and FBA business up and rolling. There's the videos that we've mentioned with Suzanne. There's other books and products from other experts that are doing this. There's the discussion forum, which probably once you've gone through a lot of the materials here and you feel like you still want a little bit more of something, you have questions, that's where you need to go, is that discussion forum, and we'll have a link to that near here, and you'll see other people that have taken the course asking questions. You'll see Skip participating and Suzanne and some other experts as well as other students that are doing this and other people who are newer than you are if you feel new to this. So you can jump in and be helpful and be helped in that forum area. And so just be sure to look for that. Don't count this video right or this audio that you've just listened to as the entirety of your training. There's a lot more to this. And I also want to mention that if you want some one-on-one hand-holding and want to work with a really good coach such as Suzanne or one of the other great coaches that Skip and I have worked with, there's an 800 number that you can call. And even if you're international, you can work with our team. And we don't just teach Amazon and FBA, although we're getting into that. You know, anything eBay, online business, just give a call. We've got a great team set up to take your questions and answer and talk through. Just let them know if you tend to hang out with Skip more than you hang out with me. Just let them know, you know, who sent you that way. If you're listening to this training now and you've never heard of me before, but you've been with Skip for years, well, tell them Skip sent you. If you've been with me for years, tell them Jim sent you. But that phone number is 800-578-3449. Skip and I both use the same coaching team, like I mentioned earlier. It's no big secret. And it's kind of helped both of us out because we have a slightly different vent on what it means to be successful on the Internet. And when the two worlds kind of merge together, we've produced some amazing coaches doing some amazing things. And in all cases, they have successful businesses, as you've heard Suzanne talking today. We don't hire coaches that read a script. We hire coaches that are having success running their own online businesses, and we ask them to spend a little time each week helping our students, and they go through some really great experiences. And this isn't a big pitch fest. It's just letting you know, hey, if you want some more help, hold some hand-holding, and you have a little money to invest in your education, that would be a good thing to look into. But anything else that we need to cover, Skip and Suzanne, that as we wrap this up, have I missed anything or any final thoughts for those who have listened to this recording?
No, I think this has been pretty pretty complete. We covered an area. I think the neatest thing for me is that Suzanne and I each learned some really good tips from each other. So
absolutely,
I did as well.
My goal is to shut down my inventory here locally completely within 6 months and teach the girls running my business how to completely transition that over to FBA. You know, that's my goal.
I have the same goal. Well, one thing I would just say, you gave a little pitch there for the coaching group. You might give the phone number again. It was a little fast. But also, folks shouldn't be afraid to call. The people they're going to talk to are sales consultants, but we have trained them and instructed them. There are no high-pressure sales pitches or anything like that. These guys are the guys you'll talk to and the gals you'll talk to are very knowledgeable. Very sincere, very good at what they do, and you know, they'll work with you to develop a program that fits your needs. It's not some canned, high-priced program with a big sales pitch.
Yeah, we take very few students any given week, and we treat them very personally. And you make a great point, Skip, too. We've been doing coaching for, I don't know, close to a decade now, several years, and you just won't find complaints. That's the thing, and I tell people this, you know, if you look at my reputation or you go and Skip, and even both of us, we're both ranked very high among the most trusted internet marketers online for a reason. It's because we treat people right, and if they're not happy, we give them their money back. I mean, that's the big secret to success on the internet and protecting your reputation, and we've both been doing that for a decade now. That phone number is 800-578-3449, and like Skip said, we don't give our sales reps incentives to sell. They have to find good candidates because we want happy people. And what you'll find too when you call them up is they're going to leave you better than they found you, meaning even if you don't think this is for you coaching-wise and you just want to kind of do it on your own, they're going to give you a free resource or the email address of a guy that has something in common with you that you should use as someone to contact to get some help with an issue. They're just real knowledgeable, good guys. And we've been using the same guy to direct our call center for a long time, nearly a decade, both of us. Nathan, he's a great guy. Talk to him if you call in and get a chance to. He's doing a good job for both of us. So, yeah, don't be intimidated by that number. And just give it a shot and see if it's something for you or not. And if not, keep using the great resources that we're giving you here, and that's what most people are going to do, and you can have a ton of success doing just that. This isn't a big pitch fest for coaching. It's only for those who are in a great position to take advantage of it. But what else did you have, Suzanne, any final thoughts or
just a final thought on the FBA. It can work in a lot of different situations. I do have several retired couples or individuals that do this, and you know, they do their sourcing a few months out of the year, you know, during the warm weather months when they can get out and do it. They build up that inventory, and then they go on a two-month cruise to Greece, and they still got money coming in because that inventory is selling and shipping, and they don't have to do anything. You know, I've got people that live in Wisconsin and New York, and they do their sourcing during the milder months of the year, and when it's, you know, this time of year and blizzards and ice storms, they don't have to get out and do anything. That money's just coming in. So you don't have to be out there sourcing every week. You can time this to where it works for your annual type schedule, and it's, you know, really just a great way to put that business on autopilot.
You know, it occurs to me we've talked a lot about
that have RVs that just travel around the country buying books and DVDs and shipping them off to Amazon, and then they go on to the next city.
You don't have to have a physical address to do this business, physical location that you're tied to. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Talking about multiple income streams, what a perfect fit.
And you don't
because every
have...
year, you know, Karen and I go to the Bahamas this time of year for a couple of weeks, and we always have to shut down our eBay business because, you know, except for the dropship products, I have to shut down all my eBay business, remove all my auctions, take everything down, and, you know, we're dead for 2 weeks.
Right.
Now I don't have to do that anymore because Amazon will ship both the eBay and the Amazon stuff.
And I've run across people that, you know, students that have studio apartments, they have no storage space, none. And this solves that problem. You know, you don't have to have an eBay room or a garage or a basement to put 400 things in. You know, you just ship them out one box at a time and no storage needed. So it can work for a lot of different situations.
Suzanne, have we coached anyone that is an international student that's begun using Amazon FBA? You'd have to get a little creative with the logistics of it, I would think.
I do have
right?
one in Canada. They don't have the FBA there yet, but I understand it's coming. And then I've got a couple in the UK that it's a little complicated, but you really need to have FBA in the country you live in for all the fees and the inbound shipping and everything to work. That's
right.
Where they get hung up, is that inbound shipping is going to pretty much eat up everything they'll make.
Right.
So there's other ways around it.
It's predominantly a U.S.-based opportunity. Unless you're real creative and maybe have some good connections in the United States that you can leverage. Would that be an accurate statement?
That's an accurate statement, yes.
Yeah, okay. I thought you'd have a good feel for that. I wasn't aware of anyone who was hitting it out of the park yet based outside of the United States with Amazon FBA. I'm sure there are examples. By no means are we the only ones that have a full grasp on the topic, but we've coached enough students through this process now that I thought we might have a good feel for that. But well, hey, Suzanne and Skip, it's always a pleasure. I love hanging out with you guys and learning from you every time. And you guys both have great things going on. It's an privilege to hang out with you. But I think I'll wrap this recording up at this point and sign off. Thanks, everyone who's listened in. If you have any questions, jump on the forum. Look for Suzanne, Skip, and I. We'll be there answering questions. Thanks for listening in.
Okay, it's been a great session. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Suzanne.
Thanks, Jim.